Accession number 12716, Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 18.
Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 18. How did you feel, Mr. Coughlin, when the battalion was breaking up?
Well, I felt sad, and I felt that when they selected me to go back, I didn't want to come back. I'll tell you the truth. I think if it was one of them two fellows was there when the officer was there, he says, why don't... Well, I says, I've come this far now, haven't I? I says, no, I'm still what you call... tell you, call me battle weary, somebody just said, but I says, I'm still not that tired that I can't... I'd love to go for it. Well, he says, so would we. Well, he says, I'm sorry, the battalion's breaking up. I said, I couldn't grasp it. I couldn't see, what does he mean, it's breaking up? Is it getting demoralised or it's... No, it was from GHQ headquarters that were one of the most experienced brigades in the country. Well, in the army, anyhow, that had seen all this... been through everything and more or less been in all the battles and all the thick of everything. So we thought, like, we'd pick you for the most battle experienced men to go back and train these men for the crossing of the Rhine. Oh, I said, well, that's funny to me, like, you know, I couldn't grasp it myself. Well, I thought we were going to, you know, for the crossing of the Rhine, you know, because Jerry will look for the crossing of the Rhine. I thought, well, why take a battalion or a company or a brigade like I was back when we were bloody, or were like the cream of the army, you know, I would have called ourselves the cream of the army, because we were the cream of the army. We did everything we were asked to do, and we never failed on the job yet. That was called De Monte's words, anyway. We never failed them yet. We never failed them on everything. So why us? A lot of blokes ask, why us? Same as that colour sergeant come back and he says, why? I don't know what they broke the battalion up. Well, I said, I can't understand it. But, as it happened, like, it was a good thing for me, but it wasn't a good thing for a lot of the other lads who were going into, well, the war was nearly over, mine. But still, there again, they could have been killed with us. There was one or two might have been getting killed with other regiments, other battalion. But after the Rhine, we didn't lose any men, at least, did we? The crossing of the Rhine, we didn't lose any to what we thought we were going to do. Because that's why we thought, their thoughts were, I can gather by... HQ and everything, and the army generals and everything, we lost a lot of men across another line, so therefore there was that much surplus, instead of calling anybody up, and there was that much surplus air force, that much surplus artillery, that much surplus sailors, because there was no, they didn't want all these navy, all this administration, he says, that was all in England, all done now, why not train them into infantry for crossing of the Rhine?
And you went back to do that?
I was supposed to go, well, I didn't, I went back. You know, on the administration side.
So what happened to you?
Me? What happened to me? Well, there was about 50 or 60 of us. All battle experience bloke. There was none... what's the matter? Hey? No, all battle experience bloke. As I said, like, all had seen, you know, knew the game, you know, knew the job, and knew, there was about four or five sergeants. A lot of drivers, administration, cooks, a bit of everything, out of everything, officers, there was one there, they used to call him Captain Bennett, Bomb Happy Bennett, he went back, they used to call him Bomb Happy Bennett, anyway, I know it's a, they shouldn't do that, because he was a bit crazy type of a man, you know, Bomb Happy they used to call
him. Was he Bomb Happy because he was... under stress or...
Under pressure. He just act like a bit silly, you know. You could say anything to him, you know. He's one of them type of blokes, but he's soft. You have to call him Bomb Happy Bennett. He's Bomb Happy Bennett. The way he was tapped on, you know. I don't think he was Bomb Happy, but that's the way he was... That was really his nickname. He was one of them. George Wood, he must have been CO. He was one of them. We went down from there. Where did we go to? Oh, I'll tell you. They sent us there and told us to leave all our equipment. Everything, don't take anything with you, only change your clothes and everything, and put us on it, and I finished up at Ostend. Ostend, and I went to Ostend, and I went to this company, they put me in private lodgings. There was no camps there, they'd all moved up, like, you know, it was only a port for unloading stuff and army ordnance, you know, for ammunition and stores and that. So I went and reported to this bloke at the, like an RTO, and he says to me, another lad went with me, I think it was a sergeant, he was down Birmingham where he was a Bromwichham lad, and about four of us went in this private lodgings till we got a boat. I think we were there about 5 days, 5 or 6 days in this lodging, just walking about enjoying ourselves. I thought it was a good life, like, you know. But I knew, like, we knew the war was over, more or less. Oh, because there was only the bloody amount of stuff they had up there. They could have taken Russia and Germany and a lot of the amount of stuff they had up there at that time, you know, the tanks and things ready. Oh, the bloody hell. I'm exaggerating. I don't think I was. I've never seen as much equipment, and I'll tell you that now, and all the time I was in the army. So
you went back to England on a ferry?
Yeah.
Where did you go then?
We landed at, where did we land at? At Tilbury or somewhere around there. Liverpool or somewhere around there. Where was it? Somewhere around there. I think it was Liverpool. And we met again with the RTO. And it's, there's about six or seven of us. I'm giving you train tickets to Derby. I says, where to Derby? He says, you'll get your orders from there. But to report to the transport depot at Derby. So the lad called Lenny Powell, he was a lad from Birmingham, lad. He was a big desperado, big fighter, he's another one, a cracker man. I was fighting. So I went from there, went up to Derby, and the sergeant was with us, like a sergeant, Sergeant Kitchen. He wasn't Dennis Kitchen. So I went and reported. He says, there was six or seven of us. He says, you've come for wagons. I says, are we going? He says, that's what you've come for. Well, he says, they never told us. So he says to the other drivers, go and pick your wagon. All new wagon. I bet there'll be 400 or 500 of them all in there, lined up. He says, go and pick your wagon. Go and have anyone you want. So we all went, and he says, well, you have to have a 15 in a weight or a 3-tonner. You know, which you could have a 3-tonner or a 15 in a weight. So I goes down, I fetch this 3-tonner back to the reception, you know, where they're in. Fill it up with petrol, he says. We've got it at the filling station there on the barracks. We all filled up, and the sergeant come out to us. He says, now then, we're going to Skipton. Skipton? I said, never heard of it. I said, where's it at? He says, it's in Yorkshire. I've never heard of it. Well, he says, we've all got a map. He says, I don't want you to go on convoy. He says, I want you to make your own way there. He says, instead of convoy, he says, you only harass yourselves. He says, if you want to go in twos, go in twos. Anybody that, you know, that knows the way, a bit the way. So me and this lad called Lenny Paul, both got a wagon, like, I says, follow me, then, and I'll follow you. No, I says, I'll follow you, Jim. So we got as far. We got lost. We got into Bradford. So we got into Bradford, and I said, stopped the night in Bradford and had a good time. Had a drink, a few drinks and everything. Oh, I'm not rushing up with a bloody wagon. So we stopped in Bradford, went in this pub. I remember just outside of Bradford on Morley, Angel, I think they called the pub. I'm not too sure if they called the Angel. Yeah, it was a grand pub and all. We only had Wellingtons on, like, because it was a wet night and everything. We put our Wellingtons on, because we went to the car park. It was all bloody slush of water, you know, where there were pools of water in there. And we went to this dance hall, and we got barred out the dance hall. They wouldn't let us in, you know, because we had Wellingtons all over the dance. We're getting drunk and all. So we stopped the night in the truck, because we didn't know where we were at. No lights or nothing, you know, couldn't see now. We had them pinheads, and there was no signs up, you know. Had to go by the towns. So we got to the stops the night, like, and we stopped nearly half the day. Well, there's no good rushing. So we set off, I don't know what it would be, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I remember getting to through Bradford into Keighley. I guess to Keighley, and I says to my bloke, I says, Have you ever heard of Skip? And he says, ah, it's just up the road, lad, about 12 mile or 10 mile. I says, that's a champion. So I says, okay, we set off. So after about 12 or 14 mile, I stopped. Couldn't see anybody. I was right in the moors. That was a place called Blubberhouses. And there happened to be a bloke coming along with a tractor, old tractor, a farm man. I says, where's Skip then? He's back there, you've come too far. Oh, I says, I'm not going to go back there tonight. So we pulled the wagon around in the side, round in a field, just off the turret, and got down and slept there. Because it was right dark then, about 7 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock at night, and we slept there. Oh, we couldn't have found our way back, we wouldn't have known, because no thing. Then we come back, we went straight back to Skipton again, and missed it about 3 or 4 miles before we found it again. I'd never heard of it, saying it was strange country. It's rather comical, you know, you've been in a strange country, and no signs. If there'd been any signs, I don't know, but no signs. And what we got there, like, officer was there, said, where have you been? I said, we got lost. He says, I think you left the country, you know. I said, well, you couldn't argue with it, like, you know, because there was no discipline at the time, like, you know, because we were the advance party. There was about another hundred not coming after us. So we got, and what we did, we went round and went to this old building, they call it Fattorini. You've heard of the jewellers, Fattorini jewellers, where they had a big mill down, factory down there, big jewellers shop and everything. Well, we went around putting all these bunk beds up about 10 days before the other lads come. There we were all bloody day putting bunk beds up in there, bunk beds. And then we went down to up to another, just outside of a place called Gargoyle, put in a church there, put bunk beds in there. And then we went to a place called Cross Hills and put in a mansion there, a big old mansion there. And then we went to Avril Park, where there was another big old mansion there. All these old mansions were lighting fires. You know, the big stoves in the centre, drying everything out and putting palliasses down and these bunk beds up and beds up. Well, I said, there's only 150 coming. You know, I couldn't. Well, then when they all started, you know, for being there, all the intake started coming. We needed more than them, but we only had to find some more billets, you know what I mean? Oh, and
how was it organised?
Pardon?
How was it organised?
Well, they were transferred out, you know, organised. We were like, in what way, like, you know, the organised.
You would be in a section of your own?
Yes.
We would say,
what we call staff were in a billet of our own. You see, we got all these bunk beds ready for these intakes coming in. Well, when they come in, we were the advance party, but all the other of our regiment men and all come, you know, about another 150 after us, you know, instructors and sergeants, officers, all kind of corporals, and, you know, administration, some out of some other battalions, you know, some out of the Green Howards, some out of things, some of the Ben Wilders, you know, and they all come and joined us and all. There'd be about 200 or 300 of us then, staff, and staff all had a different billet. So we would have to go to the station on the wagon. When they used to come on the station, RTO used to ring, there's a consignment come and pick them up. Well, I used to go with the sergeant, and they had all the details, and they used to take them to the billets, do you see? And they'd organise, the sergeants waiting there, and an officer, you know, and corporals, for training them, directing them into the billets, and putting them in the bunks, and getting them organised, ready for the cookhouse and everything, having a meal of everything. Oh, it was well organised, there was no... And RTO used to ring us, and I used to go down, another wagon, maybe 3 wagon loads come on. 50 men or 40 men, you know, until we got the full consignment in each company. There was 3 companies, A, B, C and D, 4 companies still, just the same, in headquarters, just the same, just like a battalion.
What was the quality of men like that were coming in? Because you said they came from all over.
What? A lot of them deserted. Because they couldn't stand the pace. They wanted, a lot of them were never out of Tinker. Couldn't ever find them. They were always deserting. Because, see, there were a lot of them from heavy artillery. They'd never been used to this training, because we're tapping them on the mowers and grassing them and doing tank training and shooting the tanks and anti-tanks and marching them 30 mile a day, you know. It was killing the poor lot of them. A lot of them was RAF men. A lot of them was out the artillery. A lot of them were sailors. Ex-sailors, you know. Well, a lot of them would never have met soldiers in their lives. Not if they tried, and they wouldn't, because been never seen any action, you know what I mean? They'd had easy going in the artillery, not in the artillery, in the Navy, and that they've never done such out like this. And having to walk everywhere they do, and the group, and living as rough as they have to do. I see sometimes they have to go on night schemes where they had to down where they were, and the ground's laid out, and it wasn't in the winter, mind, in the summer, like it was. They weren't used to that either, were they? And if it went on a rope march, oh dear, man, half of them never got there. They used to just sit on the grass, just tired. They used to follow, sometimes they'd follow around with a wagon to pick them up, stragglers. Oh dear, man, they were on top of the hood, top of the cab, top of everywhere. Every mile I was picking them up, you know what I mean? By the time I'd finished, I had to go back and go, keep coming back. About 50 set off, there's only about 20 finished, so they could be, you know, laid on the roadside off. And of course, it was hard on them, I quite agree. It was a, well, you know, because they were trying to train them too fast because they didn't know how long the round was going to last, and we wanted them within a fortnight or 3 weeks or a month, you know. Well, they were at it all day and night. We didn't rest, we didn't give them any rest, see? And it was just a bit too much for them. I thought so, anyhow, myself, because it was tiring us and all, because we had to, you know, we had to be with them all the time. And the sergeant and bloody hell and training and PT and learn them to shoot and rifle range and everything. They never done, some of them never shot a rifle, do you know that? Some out the raft had never shot a rifle. And the sailor hadn't, had he?
So there must have been quite a number of disciplinary problems.
There was a lot of disciplinary problems. All the clink was, the jail door clink was always full, default and that. I don't want someone daft, you know what I mean? They just didn't want to know, didn't want to know. Which naturally, I wouldn't have wanted to know and that's been in the army. Maybe there must, some of them been in the Navy about 3 or 4 years, maybe, and just come into that, you know, surplus. Plus they were just like bloody, well, laggies, I would say, you know, just tossed about and kicked about from pillar to post. Cause they, but just to say, they weren't allowed out after 10 o'clock at night, you know, that barrack rumbling. We were allowed out, the staff, to, you know, all night if we want. They had an all night pass, but they weren't allowed. And we had these regimental police on them all the time. They were knocking them off left and right, you know. Because they'd been used to stopping out to win the light, you know, in some of the battalions and regiments and that. Well, when in the infantry, they'd have to be up on the morning. See, we're going out at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes on the training with them, see. Well, they didn't want them asleep, go to bed at 12 o'clock or come out there. Some of them snuck out, like, naturally. They couldn't control, throw them all.
Did any of them make good soldiers?
Yes, one or two of them got promotions. I remember a Scots lad, he came out of the artillery, he was made a sergeant or a corps before he left. I was one or two of them, were keen, you know, a lot of them took to it, but 95 didn't. Oh, there's one or two was, I know one lad was recommended for a commission. He's an educated lad, like, you know, he was recommended for a commission. I don't know if he took a one, but I know he was made a corps and we're going to be able to made a, put him in for a commission. But as he says, he had long to go, whether it's the Bob come out, he says, I don't think he took it. It wasn't worth it, he says. Well, there's one or two, I did very well. Not a lot, mind, I'll tell you. One of them did. One did the other way, you know what I mean. Because I say, and we used to have staff dancers. And they weren't allowed to them either, you know what I mean. Oh, it was. They thought we were putting on them, you know what I mean. Well, that was the ruling, so. And we always had to wear belt and bayonet, staff, so we knew who we were. Well, they didn't know to take the belt and bayonets off, me, see, so they, you know. So they couldn't sneak out with a belt and bayonet on, do you see? That was discipline. Discipline. Some of them were, oh, some nasty ones about them, nasty lads about them, aye, some nasty, aye, it was. And the group didn't suit them. Because they weren't used to sitting on the side of the road eating bloody group out of bloody Dixie. They were used to sitting down in the mess deck or somewhere like that, you know what I mean? Oh, it was hard. I must have broken a lot of the poor heart.
How long were you there?
12 months I was there. I went in the march, I went to the march. From there. It broke up then. After crossing the Rhine, we turned them for India. We sent them to India, what we had. We did the detail of the started getting smaller. After we'd getting over the crossing of the Rhine, we turned these lads, well, we sent some. You know, I don't know if they were backup troops or what. I don't know if they got into action, but we got some went back over abroad, like. And something might have went on placing, like, or something like that. But the latter end was we sent them to India. That's where.
That included the bad ones?
Then?
That included the poor ones?
Oh, they all had to go, all had to go, they all had to go. Oh, they all knew how to use a rifle. Oh, some of them were discharged, anyhow, but some of them were poorly men, like, you know, there was backlash of a lot of. But, because I nearly got sent to India. I nearly got landed at India. I was just one, funny they'd say that. I was one afternoon, the major had gone away on holiday, the major, and this lieutenant was in charge. And he come to me late, he says, I want that van out, that wagon out, be 2 o'clock. Or half past. I said, I can't, I'm on pay parade at that time, I want my pay. You will do as I say. All right, I said, I'll be there. Well, as it happened, I wasn't there. And when they found me, I was in the pub. So the sergeant come in, I remember Bill Orrick, he says to me, you want a Jimmy? He says, Lieutenant Murray wants, he says, you're supposed to be on parade with that wagon for to take him on a recce up to Grassington on there for a summer. I said, I explained to him, I said, what I couldn't do. So, 10 minutes after, Sergeant Two Powers come, put me in the guard room. Lovely, I says, lovely. Disobeying an order. No. So I went in front of this bloke and he says, right, CO, company office CO, you. So I went in front of CO, like, Colonel Wood. And he says to me, why did you disobey an order? I told him. He says, I'll not have you speak to my officers like that. I said, what do you mean, officers? I said, he's never been out the country. He's only been here left in about 6 months. And I got a punch in the back of the back with a bloody RSM. So I lashed out at him. I said, I'll kill you if you do that again. And Colonel Wood says to me, put him back in the guard room. Oh, put him back, I'll reseat you. Okay. So about 2 days after, he sent, I was up in front of the CO again. He says, now, Coughlin, he says, I've been considering you a long time, he says, about this job. He says, why did you disobey the order? One of the, why? I says, would you like the RSM to punch you in the back and kick you in the back? He shouldn't have done that. Oh, well, he says, you shouldn't have answered him back. He says, that's not discipline. Ah. He says, I think the only punishment I can give you is send you to India with this next man. Well, thank you very much, I says. I said, I'll only go out for the journey. What do you mean? I says, I'm 26, devolver. I says, 25, nearly on the job now. I said, I'll only be there. I said, by the time I get to India and back, I said, it'll be for the ride. He says, I'll see to that. I says, why? He says, I'll have so many groups knocked off you. Oh, I said, I better shut my mouth here. You know what I mean? So I said, pull him back in the guard room, give me 14 days detention. So I went back in the guard room, like, and it wasn't what you call heavy in there, because the guard room, because they were all in, these young recruits and that, they didn't know what they were doing, you know what I mean? They never bothered us. And I was just getting beer, pints of beer, every night, or bottles of beer off the lads, off the local, you know, my mates. So I was there about 14 days after, and he came to me, he says, I've reconsidered it, Colonel, he says, I'll let you off this time. He says, you've done your 14 days. He says, would you like to join up? I says, what? He says, no, come on. I said, I'll put it on the notice for so about a week after it had on. Any man wishing to join back, because ready for the mob, wishing to rejoin, you could rejoin, as your service will be counted as double. So I went up about a week after in front of Colonel Wood again. He saw me, he said, oh no, not you. He says, we're trying to get shot of you, we don't want you. You know what I mean? What he said to me. I think he was only joking, like, you know, he started laughing. He says, well, he says, only thing I can offer you. I says, I don't mind going on the continent into Germany. I says, any regiment will do. Well, he says, it's like this. If I send you to you get your own job and do what you have to do, everything. He says, but I'm afraid I can't give you that. I says, what have you got on there? He says, there was one or two, it was about 10 of us or 12 of us, we wanted to rejoin, because see, I'd have had 6 and a half, we had about 13, yeah, if I did another 7, like, you know, I thought to myself, I'd come up with a decent pension, like, you know, looking at the future. He says, the only thing I can give you is the green hours in Cyprus. I says, you can cut that out, you know. I'm not going back there. Oh, no, I says, keep it, then. Keep it. All right, I can't give you no more. I says, that's all there is open. As I said, I don't mind going back on the continent. He says, there's no vacancies on the continent. It's all for abroad. Palestine, he says, I could have sent me to Palestine, because, you know, all that trouble was there then. He said, I can send you to Palestine. I said, I've just come back from there, haven't I? He says, you know that. He said, I quite agree. And he was trying to be a bit nice then, you know. Well, he was ready for the mob and all. He wasn't worried about me, like, you know. He wasn't worried about anybody, because he was ready for the mob. Well, I don't think it was about a month after before he went, you know, about 4 nights a month. But if it sent me to India, oh, dear me. I tell you, I don't want to win, because I was ready for the mob.
So you were demobbed. Where were you demobbed? Setchfield.
Setchfield. Well, I was the last man, we were the last men to leave Skipton, as it happened, like, you know, when all the trucks were taken back up into Scotland. I went up to Scotland twice to take a Carlisle through Carlisle and take trucks back. I come back to the regiment, there was only about 10 of us left then, and we had a, what you call a bit of a, told us it was somewhere in March, I think, March or something like that when we did.
In 1946?
Yeah, about March, and I was sent from there. He says, well, I was the last 10 after getting all the trucks, the administration, all the quartermaster stores, all the thing. I was left on the administration again, you know, all the quartermaster stores cleaned up, all these billets we'd been in, you know. We got private cleaners and we were like supervising the job, like, and organising things, and but I wasn't like, you know, I was helping with it, like, you know, with the wagon. When I went back, I took my wagon to Catterick and handed it over there. And I was at Catterick about a week. I landed at Catterick and they put me on a wagon. I said, what's this? He said, keep running to Hartlepool to fetching troops for, you know, for ready for the mob. And I was running troops from Skipton to York every other day, and I was running stores down to Weedon in Northampton, you know, running return store depots, all rifles, ammunition, equipment. When they were demobbed, I was getting all the equipment, putting on a wagon and taking it for the quartermaster. Oh, the good one. The last 3 or 4 months was great because we didn't have any parades, anything, just doing what you call administration. But I enjoyed myself because we went out with a wagon and taking rations, and we got so much money. Like to go down, going down to the water to Northampton. See, there was no motorways then. It was all right. It was to go down through Bradford, through Woodersfield, through Sheffield, through down, all the way down there, through Derby, all the way down there, down to Northampton. Then we was to come back, you know, didn't have to tell us when we had to be back, 2 days or 3 days, because we was to stop the night in the army depot. It was army depot, and stop the night and come back the next day.
So then you went to Sedgefield?
Be demob?
No, I wasn't demob straight away. I wasn't demob, so I was there about 10 days, driving wagons for them. When I first went there, because we were waiting for demob, was put me in the canteen. You know, and then Naffy's cleaning up, you know, tidying up anything to keep us occupied again, as I said. Me and another lad called Gina Jones from Barney Castle, aye. He was demobbed at the same time as we just. And he says to me, can you drive over? Have you got a license? I says, I've got a license. Right, we're short of wagon drivers. Oh dear, what's the want? This sergeant come to me, I says, well, once you go with this other thing, pick men up that have been coming to Hartlepool, ready for demob, you know, for demob. When I was going through and fetching stores from Hartlepool to Setchfield. Till the last day, I bloody got demobbed. So the last day I was driving the wagon, I packed it in on the night and I was demobbed the next day.
What date was this?
Oh, March, sometime in March, I could tell you. It's on my card there somewhere.
And in the demob centre, you would get your civilian clothing, etc.?
Oh, I went through the routine, you know. Well, we went to York. They took us from Setchfield, like to York. And dropped us off in Fulham Barracks there and sat there and had a meal. Oh, they had a meal for us. There was about 3 or 4 wagon load of us, and the sergeant come like, and he says, right, follow me, and you go through a section where the suits, pick what suit you want. Then you went to the next section, pick what shoes you want. Next section, pick what ties you want. Your size, you know. Well, there were civilians, man, that was behind the counters, like, handing you your clothes, just with a tape there, just, size, you know what I mean. And your boots, you've got them all in the thing. Do you want to buy your top coat? I said, I'll buy my top coat, you know, your overcoat. I think it was £1.50 for your overcoat, or £1, you know. If you wanted to buy it, or you could hand it in. I bought the coat, like, you know. I thought it would come in handy, you know, for something. And the big loudspeaker, you go into the reception hall after you're getting all your kit. You know, do you want it? You can change, or you can go in your uniform. I kept my uniform, because you could keep it. You could get a price if you want to buy it. So, and went to the reception, and the speaker's in the reception, and it says, there's a train going to leave York, all them from Darlington, you know, for Darlington, and it comes over the loudspeaker. The wagons are outside now, get in the wagons, and we'll take you to Darlington. There's a train at such and such and such. We all got our warrants and our money, you know, money. So, we get into York. So, it says, 4 of us are. I'll forget it, we're into York. Oh, about 3 quarters an hour for, oh, let's go and have a drink. We never got home the next morning. We never got home. We got drunk. And where's the landlord? I don't forget. I could tell you the pub, I just can't remember. Where's the landlord? Did you take bed and breakfast? Aye. I sold my boots. I sold my cap, my trilby. And I said, you know, and the pub, they were all waiting to buy stuff like that. I didn't want them. I never wore a trilby in my life. I was selling all the things. Aye. So we stopped the night, come back the next day. We told them to come back with his forward friends. Horrifying.